So I was already warmed up, guys, based on something like that. So, anyways, we're
What are you guys talking about?
What are you guys talking about?
Oh, very good. I think Tuesday works well for us, too, because I'm just being honest here, because I am honest and a bit of an asshole. We had this discussion before the podcast started. Ed doesn't think I'm an asshole, but I do. You seem better rested today.
Yes. I mean, it's just, you know, I didn't work today. If when we record on Wednesdays.
Like yeah, no, that's work, what I mean. So. But I felt bad for you because I knew it's you really fine, wanted to, like, do it. But I also knew you were, like, really, really, like, ridiculously tired.
Honestly, like, it like gets me excited for stuff, you know. And, I just finished watching the episode and it was so good.
So the first episode, yeah?
Yeah, the first episode.
The second one comes out tomorrow. Now, yeah. There was a bit of a kerfuffle. We were going to try to podcast about that, but we are not allowed for certain reasons. But, yeah, man. Do you know what the second one's going to be about, though? Just so I can kill it for you and you can be like, oh my god.
I don't.
It was about, it's going to be about Star-Lord T'Challa.
Oh, yes.
Star-Lord T'Challa. Yes. So Black Panther.
And Chadwick also,
that's
like, performed.
That's his final performance. So, yeah, if there's exciting. Ever a first impression that you wanted to hear to why you should watch, well, we're talking about What If,
yes,
the animated, animated show on Disney Plus just showed up. If you ever wanted a reason to watch this, watch it this week at least, because you will get the final performance by Chadwick Bosworth playing T'Challa.
Chadwick Boseman.
Joe Boseman.
Bosworth.
Oh, sorry, I'm getting you mixed up with Kate Bosworth. Sorry, Chad, I had a slight crush on her back in the day, so sorry about that, buddy. But, so you did watch the first. So, first impressions, who would you recommend this for?
Oh, that's so hard, because I'll be honest, it took me a little while to see the brilliance. I think it has to do with the animation style.
Okay.
What did you think about the animation style?
It's cel shading, right? If I remember correctly.
Yeah,
I
think
love
so.
Cel shading
okay.
Because I play a lot of video games.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Thank you. Yes. So I'm thinking.
Have you ever played Wind Waker? Like that.
What's that game that you showed that you told me about?
Persona 5.
No. Where you're like. The Wolf Man and
Wolf Among Us.
The Wolf Among Us.
The one you
yes.
downloaded it, but you never played it. Yeah.
No, I did. I played like a little bit of it, but I didn't get very far.
Did you get to the pig?
No.
The three little pigs are the best.
Oh, really?
Well, you see one of them. One of them is just the whole thing's awesome. So, Wolf Among Us, great video game shout out. It's a Telltale, so one of those point and click adventures that came back, and it's fucking brilliant. But yes, also
so good. Yeah. So that now clicks in my head. At first, I wasn't sure about it. I was like, oh, it looks a little odd. But then, as I started watching it and I saw some of the things that they do in this episode, which I'm sure we'll talk about, I was like, wow, that's really cool. So, I feel like it is for pretty diehard Marvel people. I think that, you know, especially because it conjures the What If comic book series and stuff like that.
So what if you come, as you start moving off the What If, or the Marvel spectrum, like if you're like how I used to be, and like, I just don't like Marvel, and I don't want to do Marvel, and that was just me being stupid, by the way, but if you're on that side of things, would you suggest walking into this one to see something new, or is it like, I don't think this would go for you?
I'm not too sure if you're like someone who doesn't like Marvel, I'm not too sure you would really get the most out of this, because I think that this gives you some nice nostalgia for the Marvel, for the MCU movies, you know?
Very
like,
good.
This first one focuses a lot around, like, the first Avenger and stuff like that. And, you know, if you didn't like those movies, I'm not sure. What do you think?
I just wanted to hear from you. I'm completely biased, so that's why I was, like, going to kind of step away from first impressions, because I don't think, I'm always going to tell you to watch this stuff because I love the MCU and I love the direction it's going in. That being said, I completely agree with that. And I think The Independent, because I read a bunch of articles on this.
Yeah.
So we only had one episode to talk about. I did a lot of research. So, but The Independent was one of the only ones that gave a semi-unfavorable review to this because, and again, I always, anytime I see The Independent, I see the guy from Ted Lasso.
Oh, yes. Trent Grimm.
Trent Grimm, yeah. So, but it also makes me think of them as very, like, poignant and very, like, making, like Polygon is. Polygon, as I said, I hate that magazine only because it makes decent points. Like, right. Points that I don't, like, it takes antagonistic points, but then it argues them very well. Yeah, and yeah. I always read their articles because of that, even though I usually disagree with them. This was another one that I generally disagree with the Independent's take on the fact that they said this was more of the same. However, I can totally see where they're coming from.
Yeah.
If like, this isn't going to open the door, wait for, like, Shang-Chi.
Yeah, I'm so excited for that now.
Or some of the other stuff coming out to, like, open the door to more Marvel for you. Yeah. Or even go back and watch Loki. Like that's what I would say. Like, if you've watched Loki and you hadn't seen anything else and you were like, I actually quite like Loki, then What If is definitely your jam. Yeah. Like, What If is next thing to watch for you. Even though it's animated. You know, like, that's the thing that gets other people. It's like, oh, it's a kid thing. Like, it's not necessarily for kids. My kid did watch it with me, but it's a 12 plus.
Did she like it?
She liked it. Oh, she loved it. Yeah, because I had her watch it because it was Peggy Carter. And she doesn't, like, her favorite character is Black Widow, but that's part of the reason it's one of the, she hasn't seen Black Panther. She knows nothing about all the other wonderful women in Marvel.
Yeah.
And then this was another woman, but she's never really watched Agent Carter with me, so. I wanted her to see this to be like, because the other cool thing is
Hayley Atwell, even in animation, she's so beautiful. She's such a wonderful voice.
Yeah. In another one, you're just like, wow.
It was really cool to have her back and some of the other
characters. Hayley Atwell stands out for me, and this isn't me calling you old Hayley, but Hayley Atwell stands out for me because, damn it, like, now and before performances, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. Yeah. Like, because Agent Carter was, what, 5, 6, 7 years ago?
At least, I want to say. Like, it was a long time ago.
Right? Yeah. ABC Studios, this was when they were first doing the stuff after Captain America. And, man, she definitely had the chops, you know what I mean? So, well done, you know what I mean? Well done on that. And definitely one of the key characters in this episode. So
and moving forward, I think, as well, for the series.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. We'll talk about that after when we get ready. But first impressions, if you're on the fence whether you like Marvel or not, this may not be one for you, you know? And this is why we put it at the beginning, so you can kind of turn off the podcast and go do something better and come back to us next week, where we'll have Mitch Bain talking with us. Yay, he's coming back. But if you do, or you're interested, or if you're like a Rick and Morty guy, if you like...
Yeah.
You know, the multiverse. I'm a physicist, so at least I it was one of my hobbies. So, you know, I love that. That's one of a theory in physics that I quite subscribe to. Yeah. So
I like everything that they're doing with regards to, you know, opening it up to the multiverse.
Yeah, I mean, like I told that. You, like, I also read a book called What If. It's not even remotely the same. It's about historical fiction. Like, what if, you know, this particular battle had gone a different way?
Oh, I love that stuff.
I know, right? Like, so that's definitely my gem. And that's why I said first impressions, I'm the wrong person to ask, because I was going to love this. But you can watch it with your kids. It's animated, so I found that easier to watch with my kids, because then if it does get really violent, it's like, well, it's a cartoon. So
43 minutes is like, it's almost like an hour long, right?
I didn't think so. I thought it was closer to 30. Okay, but maybe. I watch an awful lot of TV this day, so I may not. I do think you're right on that one. Now that I think about it, because I always hit the pause button in the beginning just to see how long I got.
Yeah.
I think this one was slightly longer, so it was 42
minutes
out there. I've been watching Atlanta, which we're going to talk about on another podcast. Those are swiftly 22 to 30 minutes. First season's 22 amazing. Minutes, and then second season is 30 minutes. I still live by the 30-minute mark on a TV show. I just say, you know...
It's the sweet spot.
I think, like if you're doing the TV shows that I like to continuously watch, things like Mythic Quest and the stuff where I like kind of checking in, if you're doing an arc, a story arc, like, I can totally see you going to an hour. It's just some hour-long stuff these days feels Kendrick. Awful long to me, you know? Like, I just think... You know, the Mando did it best, because the Mando, when it needed to be...
Yeah, like, it was long when it had to be, short when it didn't have to be.
And I think that's the way to really do it, because what does it matter now that you're streaming?
Exactly.
So, and they also got back to doing the right thing with this, and really, you know, Disney has pioneered the, you know, reversing Netflix's decision to release everything at once. We're doing
it
once a week.
Yes, and I was thinking about that again today, and I was like, yeah, man, like, I look forward to... You know, Ted Lasso and Schmigadoon.
It was just the thing. I mean, maybe Netflix did it on the basis that they wanted to reward their customers for something. And I get that, because they were the first kids on the block and they were the best kids on the block when they started. But yeah, like, don't, you know, this is a business and it's TV. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you don't have commercials anymore, so you got to do something to keep people waiting.
I think that it was probably a kind of like, the gimmick, you know, of binge watching, and because that became like a thing. Right.
Well, and this is why, like, I bring stuff like up this on the podcast, because, you know, I always lament against Netflix. Not that it's a bad company at all. It's a great company. They're doing well. But I'm always curious, because they have a board that makes some very, you know, bold decisions, I would say. Mm-hmm. And so that is one of them that I feel like, you know, and this is why I'm bringing it up, because I feel vindicated. Like, it backfired. Mm. Because now what happens is people binge watch their favorite show and then drop their membership. Mm. And so they've had huge problems with that, or bigger problems with that in the last couple of years. And that's how you get them. You say, well, then we won't binge watch. You know, we won't release that way. We're going to release once a week, and then you can at least stay with us for two months.
To me, it makes sense.
Yeah, I just, you know, I do understand the joys of getting rid of commercials, the joys of getting rid of, you know, that weight and things like that. But binge watching is just not something that I think is particularly amazing.
Yeah, you know? It's nice when you can kind of binge, you know, a half a season of Star Trek or something like that, like I'm doing, right? Like an old
show. I love it, because I knew you were going to bring it up, because he was doing it earlier when I talked to him. And it's like, no, I'm not chastising you. But I guess for me, sometimes when I binge watch stuff, Ed, I'm always like, I should just be playing a video game. Because if I want to walk around in that world, I'm like, I might as well go into the world. You know what I mean?
For people who are into their video games and stuff, I completely...
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, if I'm going to spend 16 hours on something, it's like, I might as well do it on a game that I can participate in. Yeah. But, you know.
They released some, I don't know if it was like early release footage or something from No Way Home, from the new Spider-Man film.
Ooh.
And somebody on YouTube was showing like Spider-Man 4, and I was like, I still haven't played that. I need to play that at your house.
Oh, Spider-Man. The game. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. PS5. I have the upgraded version of it, which has like the shadow effects and everything like that. I mean, that is probably, I mean, it's a, I beat it. Like, that's an always way to tell whether it's one of my favorite games or not, because I beat it. I don't beat many games because I get bored of them and I move on to the next one. And then I'll be mad at myself that I haven't beat it and try. But the best ones, I always beat. And Spider-Man, I beat on, like, the first go. Like, it was, like, one of those things that I didn't even remotely question. Batman was the only other games I could think of that were like that.
Yeah.
Batman Arkham Asylum games.
Yeah.
I played right through those. Like, I loved them. So, superheroes, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, dude, definitely have to come over and get some swing action. The swinging's the coolest part. It's Manhattan, you know? Like, I'm not... My parents are from Brooklyn, but I still love New York. So it's like, it's all about like going around all the cool parts. So, very cool. So what have you been watching this week, my good man?
A lot of Star Trek. DS9. I don't know why, I'm just kind of in one of those moods where I want something on that I can kind of pay attention to if I want to, but not if I don't want to. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like a lot of World War II documentaries again, which actually got me really jazzed for this. I hadn't, like, kind of idiotically, I hadn't realized, of course, it's going to be a World War II kind of, you know, centered story, because it's about, you know, the first Avenger, which took place mostly in that time period and stuff. And it was just awesome. It was so cool. Other than that.
Yeah. Working, huh?
Yeah, working. I got some painting done, which is nice. Just working as many hours as God will give me.
That's the way it is, man. Hey, you're getting that plane ticket, man. I'm still...
Spare some change. Working towards it.
Working towards getting...
What about you, though? You watched, like...
As I said, I work from home, so every break I get, I've usually got something on. You know, lunch break, breakfast break, whatever. Trying to think what I have been watching. So, did I tell you that... Because I go back a couple weeks sometimes, because I'm not sure I brought it up. Did I tell you that I watched Far From Home?
No, you didn't tell me.
Yeah, that was like a Saturday night where, like, I couldn't think of what to watch. And I always try to watch... Like, I generally try to watch new stuff as opposed to the stuff I already have, which is ridiculous to have a DVD collection because of that. But, like, the idea is I haven't watched all the stuff I've bought, so I try to get through that. And I, like, the MCU thing was bothering me because I was like, well... You held on to it because you said you hadn't watched the show. Like, I don't really think you care. Like, you need to see the last Spider-Man at least just to see where it's at. So, yeah, I watched it. It was great.
Feelings? Are we podcasting about it?
Oh, we can, yeah, if you want.
I would love to. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, I love all the Spider-Man flicks. Like, that Spider-Man is just, he's your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. I just got done watching Chef, so the Happy Aunt May subplot was awesome. Only because, like... Marissa Tomei, okay, this is why you love my sister, because Marissa Tomei reminds me of my sister. Like, as hot as she is, I could never, like, date or anything, because she really does remind me of my sister a lot. Yeah. And that's why when the Happy thing, I'm like, that'll be Nikki someday. Like, she'll have some dude on the side like this and won't tell anybody, because she's always like, everyone always thinks she's my little sister.
She's gorgeous.
It's hilarious. We were just joking about that yesterday, me and her. She's like, why does everyone think I'm your older brother? She's like, because you're older than me. I'm like, yeah, it's true. It's true. So... No, but, so I liked that. I liked, you know, I always like the play between Tom Holland and Zendaya. Like, I just think they work well together, and that she's a very interesting version of Mary Jane.
Okay, yeah.
Like, you know,
different to what anyone would expect. It wasn't the...
It's the kind of modernization. Now I am a man, right? So I'm going to talk about feminizing things and probably get rucked over the coals by someone for this. Please apologize. Like, I'm not the all-knowing. I'm just stating an opinion. Like, it's the better way to do it, in my view. Like,
yeah, I'm with you.
You know, you got the ghost... I always go back to Ghostbusters. Because it was like, they chalked it full of four women, and then the film wasn't that good, and it's like, wow, now you've changed the whole thing. Oceans... What was it? Oceans? Was it Oceans 12?
Yeah, didn't it go to like Oceans 8 or something like that? Like 13?
It was Oceans 8, I think. Yeah, it was with the eight women. That was better, but that still ended up going under the limelight because people didn't want to do the whole like eight women bit because that's the thing. Like, I'm all about getting females in the movie theater, but you want to get males in there too. And it's like, it's not a matter of one being better than the other. It's why I told you, and they're having a trailer for this, that the new Idris Elba Western.
Oh.
Now, don't get me wrong. Like, they're saying, like, it's a Netflix Western.
Okay.
And it's about a bank heist. It's got Regina King in it. So it's going to... I mean, we're going to watch this. Like, it's going to be amazing.
That's awesome.
But it's an all-black cast. Mm. And, like, I'm just to the point, guys. Like, I'm like, we're getting past this
too
now,
far.
Guys.
The pendulum swing
like,
too far.
In the Wild Wild West, like, unless there's a really good explanation as to why there are no white people in that town, or at least white people in that gang, like, it was a mixed environment, wasn't it? Like, that's what we're aiming for now. That's what we're going for. So, again, all women, all anything. Going back to Zendaya, like, they made her, I think, a very modern woman, you know, because, you know, that's the things that we're learning as men in the world, that like, you know, this is really how a woman feels about something. And so she's honest about what she cares about, she doesn't care about, you know, more kind of millennial, or even generation, what is it, Z? I think it is. You know, so I just like the portrayal because I thought it modernized things without, like, throwing it out the basket. You know what I mean?
100%, yeah. I agree completely. It's you know, the way of, like you say, modernizing something or representing a more modern kind of perspective, but without going too far overboard, people and...
Asshole that I am, I've argued it both ways. Because my father-in-law had watched War of the Worlds, which I don't know if you've seen. I've not seen it. And he said, like, well, it's awful. Like, it feels like it's been woked up. So kind of thing. And it was like, and you've heard me on the podcast before. I'm not keen on that term. Because I'm like, well, just because we put minorities in doesn't mean we're woking things up. But, you know, I said, listen, like, is the issue with the fact that there were minorities in it? Or is the issue with the story? And he's like... It was the story. Well, says, well, that's your problem.
Yeah,
I said, it's just you have to be careful because sometimes, like Ghostbusters, the four women in it wasn't what did that story wrong. It was the bad story. And that's what I'm saying. Like, if you're going to do that and make a statement, then you better make the best. You know, it's not hard. It's Ghostbusters.
Well, you'd think, but yeah, I
no,
get your
I, you know, I'm going to be, I'm pounding the fist on the table. Like, I'm going to pound because you know what? I am a writer and I'm like, no, it's not hard. Like, you want me to write a Ghostbusters for four women to be those guys. I could do it. I know I could do it.
Yeah.
You've got such a good franchise there.
Yeah. I do think there is timing, obviously, is a thing. You know, we talked about, a disease movie that you watched?
Oh, no, I'm watching... So you're good, because we can move on from me going crazy about the feminist thing, which happened to me watching Far From Home. No, I'm watching Sweet Tooth.
Sweet Tooth, that's right, yeah.
Which is an incredible story, really. Just, I think... I mean, it has vibes of Walking Dead, which everything post-apocalyptic has vibes of Walking Dead, you know what I mean? And that's maybe where this should have showed up, because the problem is, the and this is ruining a little bit of it for you, but you'll find all of this out in the first 10 minutes of the story. Mm. You know, it's a global pandemic that kills everybody, and it has triggers. Like, if you see someone's finger twitch, that means they're about to die from it. And, like, I put it on for my daughter and my wife, and it was like, guys, I heard decent things about this. I really wanted Catherine to try it, because it has, like, hybrids in it. It has people that are half animal, half human. And I was like... That's all the more reason she loves animals. Yeah, you know, we're all about the forest. That's our thing, right? So, and I was, you know, there was Yellowstones in it and stuff like that. So I was like, okay, this is... But then we had this element. And, my daughter was visibly distressed. And she's really good. She's like, Dad, I don't want to watch this. And, her mom was like, watch the first 10 minutes. She watched the first 10 minutes. And then she's like, I still don't want to watch this. And I'm like, good on you. I said, you tell me when you don't want to do the hard stuff. I said, we'll turn this off right now. But then Becky was like, oh, I'll watch it with you later. And then a couple days later, she was like, I don't actually want to watch that with you. And it wasn't because she was mad at me. It was because, like, it's just the pandemic thing, right? Like,
yeah. And I wonder if it is like a good story, but just it's just the wrong time for it to come out. It's an
excellent story. Like, so far, like, even despite this, it's still winning me over to keep watching it, right? And it's like, that's the problem. Like, again...
Timing.
That's the producer part. Like, you when you come up with your brilliant idea, one of your multiple brilliant ideas, if you're, like, I don't know. You know what I mean? Like,
thanks for including me in that. That means a lot to me.
Definitely. Definitely. Well, yours is with the camera when you're like, we're going to shoot that way. And I'm like, oh my God, that's brilliant. But yeah, if you got your brilliant idea, like, you want it to succeed, right? So that's the whole point of the producer, is he's trying to help you succeed with things. So if I say something's too on the nose, it means when it hits the audience, they're going to flinch. Mm. And you don't want your audience to flinch.
Mm.
Not in the first 10 minutes, okay? Mm. That is, God, I don't know how many books I've read that will tell you that the first 10 minutes of and it really is psychological, is everything. Mm. If you get them in the first 10 minutes, you've got them for the rest of the show.
Mm.
If you don't get them in the first 10 minutes, then you're done.
How long are the episodes?
That one was another one. It was about 45 minutes. Okay. So that's they're long episodes.
Post-apocalyptic...
Yeah, obviously.
About a disease.
And these hybrids. And yeah, it's all that kind of... I say post-apocalyptic...
It's Netflix, right?
Yeah, and like, the post-apocalyptic gives you the best background to it, because that's, you know, it's been done a million times now. Post-apocalyptic means now no communication, something goes down, there's no... it's all secrets. And you're slowly going to get the secrets revealed.
Mm.
You know, I guess, you know, you could also put it on the same thing as, like, Lost in one of those types of shows.
Right. Yeah,
where you don't know everything that's going on, but I think, you know, the
mystery box.
Yeah, mystery box. I just think that's kind of where we're starting with this one, and I'm going to watch it, and we'll see how it goes. You know what I mean? If it's crappy, then it's crappy. As I said, at the moment, I've stopped watching that to watch Atlanta, which we're going to do a whole podcast on, because I'm just,
because it's worth it. Donald Glover is a god.
I don't even know. See, this is the thing. Like, he is a god, you know. But this is what I was talking about last time with, like, it's very difficult when you see your people you admire and you think of them like God. So I don't want to think of him
that way. Fair enough.
I think he's a guy that we would love to sit and have a chat with and ask, like, what do you think about this? Mm-hmm. Or what are you working on with this? Because that's how I feel when I see these guys. It's like, I know we have the talent to compete, you know, within there's, we're not the only ones. There are loads of people that have the talent to compete on that level. But that's what I mean when I say, when I watched his show, I was like, I could get down with that. You know what I mean? Like, I could totally see how you made that.
I kind of wish that his Deadpool series that he was writing with his brother had actually happened.
See, I knew about nothing of it. You know about all of this. I'm always the one that's like, how did this guy get so talented? It's not magic. It's because they're constantly working on
I've been a fan of Donald Glover, like, since before Community.
Nubbed in the morning.
And then he did his stand-up, which is also just incredible. Like, if he... Whatever... This is the thing. Like, whatever he put his mind to, he would have been... He's going to be the best at it.
And that's why I like Atlanta, because I'm pretty sure that is him. That, I mean, he is playing, but he's playing himself because that's his character in that. You know, we'll talk about more on the big podcast, but I love a guy when they just... Everyone describes him, they say... He'll get it done.
Mm.
He may do it his own way, and he may not understand what he's doing, but he always gets it done. And I love that, because I think those are the people that succeed, you know, in film. If anything, from my experience and from your experience, like, those are the people we've seen, the ones who get it done, you know?
Yeah.
They don't really care.
Don't give up.
No, because they don't... Yeah, it's the whole... I love that... What I love about filmmaking is that you have to throw away common sense a lot of times.
Yeah.
Or at least other people's common sense. You have to have your own common sense and your own way of looking at things and your own way of saying, well, this is how I'm going to take my art and I'm going to put it forward.
Mm.
Now, that means you all can turn off the podcast, tell me to fuck off and say, like, what are you doing this for? I get it. It's just when you see other people that are succeeding doing it, you're like, all right, I feel better about
this. Yeah, yeah, for sure. Like, he's inspiring.
When you got your 60 beat board cards on the side, you know, you're looking at your beat sheet again, so you change this for the
fifth
time.
Oh, I'll tell you what else I watched that I think you should definitely watch. I only watched the first 10 minutes, but I was like, oh my God, this is like somebody wrote Jason's inner monologue kind of thing.
It was Corman?
Mr. Corman, yes.
Mr. Corman. Yeah, yeah. From you know, Joseph Levitt.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Gordon-Levitt. Yeah. Yeah, it's another one definitely on the list. And I want to see, same time that got released, Coda got released. And that's when I want to watch with my daughter.
See, that's where Apple got me with their trailers and stuff before the shows and stuff.
Same thing, same thing. So that was the day I had that horrible court appearance I had to make. Long story. DM me if you, or private message me if you want to know the details. I'm not going to put it on the podcast. But... I said no matter what happened at that thing, I was going to go watch that. And I ended up watching it with my daughter in the end, but it was...
Oh, okay, I wasn't.
No, I didn't. Oh, okay, I didn't, okay. So I haven't watched it yet, but I want to, because and then because my wife caught the trailer too, and I said, this is going to be good. Like, it won a ton of awards at Sundance. Yeah,
it looks like proper heart-wrenching...
Yeah, what a brilliant... concept, guys, is a deaf girl who sings. Like, and, that's just awesome.
And I love... Oh, God, I've forgotten her name. It's not Britt Marling. That's the actress that we talked about with Sophie. I hate to say it, but she's kind of famous for being the deaf actress.
She was in the West Wing. Yes.
She was in that film with John Hurt as well.
Sadly, that's how I would know her, as the deaf actress. I did love the fact that in the West Wing she had the love interest with
Bradley Whitford. Who's in this episode.
Yes,
of What If.
Stand-in character, because they needed a new...
a new asshole.
Pretty much, right?
Yeah, like and he does such a great job of being the bad guy. It always reminds me of, is it Billy Madison? Where he's the bad guy.
I love Bradley Whitford because really, and this is his sellability. Like, he reminds me of all the kids I went to school with.
Oh,
like,
really?
He always makes me think, this is what the kids I went to high school with, this is what they look like grown up now. This is how they talk grown up now. I'm not kidding. Like, every time I'm like, dude, you could have gone to St. X. You know what I mean? Like, that's you.
And he's so good in Get Out as well. Like, really creepy and in the best possible way.
Yeah, I think, oh man, you hate when I do this, but I think that's why he's good though, is he's not creepy.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
The mother is freakish as all hell. Yeah, and I just watched this. The only reason I thought it was on my 10 list when I was screenplay writing. It was one of them that I put on there. And she's terrifying.
Fantastic. Yeah, you're right.
But
he's
kind of dopey. That's what it works. He's like, hey, my man, you know. Yeah, yeah. And like, he just plays and you're like, is he really a bad guy? Is he just a doctor? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
just doing doctor stuff.
I just love him in that role. Every time he's in something, he's like... good at it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, I do agree with you. We all remember him first for being the asshole in Pretty Billy Madison.
Yes. That's so
good. Couldn't I get a delicious Triscuit cracker too, Carl?
He's so good. Love him.
The thing about ethics, business ethics. The thing about ethics is, I demand a rewrite. Sorry, you haven't seen Billy Madison that many times. It's like, what the fuck is he talking about? For those of you out there, we loved it too. Did you see his balls, man? They were weird looking. Sorry, that's all right. I must have watched that. Again, this is my childhood of watching over and over and over.
For me, it was Happy Gilmore. With the Adam Sandler movies.
Everybody loves a clown. Laugh it up, clown. He's laughing, you're laughing.
Laugh it up, clown. I wanna kiss you all over
and over and over to the night closes near.
Oh, the Wedding Singer as well. I'm such a big Adam Sandler fan. Like, I'm an apologist for him.
You cannot grow up in our era and not. I love how tangential we get on this, but completely going to throw that in. We're only talking about one episode anyway, guys. So join us for the ride. Come on, Adam Sandler. Let's tangent on that one, because I agree. You're talking about one of the busiest. And in my view, and this is gonna send shudders throughout the podcast world.
Go on.
One of the best actors.
I haven't watched Hidden Gems, but I...
Oh my God,
like,
right?
I keep hearing that it's...
so good, but Punch Drunk Love,
Punch
mate.
Punch Drunk Love,
like,
PTA.
PTA, I'm trying to think of other really good stuff he's in.
I mean, his comedies were the things that really got me. Again, Happy Gilmore, even like Little Nicky.
I have such an appreciation, because this used to be, in my highly dysfunctional family, this used to be a way for us to bond, was through movies. And you had to make them cookie cutter, because my dad wasn't going to sit through, you know, an hour and a half of bullshit. My mom wasn't going to sit through. I tell you, like, one of the worst film experiences I ever had. My parents divorced when I was 12. It was the year before Pulp Fiction comes out. So 13, Pulp Fiction comes out. Everybody's ranting about it. My mom knows I love movies. And so mom trying to be cool. And my mom's a church lady, just to let you know.
Good luck.
Like, church lady mom says, we're going to watch Pulp Fiction. Do you want to watch that with me? I know it's a bit old, but I'll watch it with you so you can watch it. I said, okay, mom. Man, I mean, 30 minutes in, I was loving it.
My
mom was like, this is filthy.
This is the devil's work.
Filthy. And actually, the worst part is when you deal with a divorced woman like that, she didn't say any of that. That's what she was thinking, and I could see it all over her face. And instead, she just kind of sat there.
I'd have loved to have seen her face for the heroin, the injection. to the heart. That would have been
right. So that's what, that was not a bonding experience. That was more of a let's never watch a film together again.
Zed's dead, baby.
So I'm pretty sure that's when she got me the TV with the video cassette player for my room. After that, that makes perfect sense now.
It's cool.
So, but Adam Sandler, like. Yep. Could watch it with mom, could watch it with dad. It was always funny. It was always stupid. Mom would laugh at some of the jokes. You know what I mean? That's what I mean. Stuff now, man, there's so much I can't put on when they're around. So much I put on in my father-in-law's the same way because there's a generation gap. Like, Adam Sandler wrote stuff with his writing team, of course, Happy Madison Productions. You know, like, making it so that everybody could watch it. Billy Madison, maybe stupid, but...
It's so funny.
It's
to me, it's a little bit of a continuation of that, like, you know, Black Sheep and Tommy Boy and that. Do you know what I mean?
There was that era, right? So this is all the SNL cast. So you had Tommy Boy and Black Sheep, you know, David Spade, Chris Farley. And then they had a couple of the people, you know, did you ever see the one with Chandler in it? I can't remember what his real name is.
Chandler Bing from Friends?
Yes. So Chandler Bing, it was Tommy Boy, so it was Chris Farley, David Spade was actually out of this one.
Okay.
Maybe it was when he decided not to do, because David Spade went on to do a couple of his own on his own.
Yeah.
And this was him with Chris Farley, and they were like travelers, traveling the, you have to see. It's horrible.
All right.
This is what I mean. Like, that's why that died out. Because it was like after Black Sheep, Black Sheep wasn't as good as Tommy Boy. Tommy Boy was hilarious. Like, trust me, man. That movie, I could recite every line from that movie.
I must admit, it was too early for me. Because obviously it took time for movies to get to Europe.
Yeah, that
from
was
America
just time with Jesus Christ. You can even ask my dad about that one, Jesus.
But even when he went into Adam Sandler, even when he went into his like rom-com mode, like things like 50 First Dates.
Oh man, that used to, when my sister was going through a hard time in Cali, right? Like, that used to be the movie we put on to cheer
love
her back up.
Film.
You know what I mean? Because it was like, it'll be all right. Look, she ends up all right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and that wasn't the only one he did. He did a bunch of loads.
I mean, there's definitely a golden era for me of Sandler stuff, and there's a. Okay, he made it.
Yeah,
and
it peters off. So, you know, I definitely, like, when you talk about his.
Click, for example, Spanglish.
Spanglish I liked.
Yeah, I mean, because it you know, also has that lovely Spanish actress, Paz Vega.
Yeah.
But it did feel like it was kind of, he peaked.
I think it comes to a point where jokes change and he's not like on the button.
But
anymore.
Like you say, though, that's when I think he starts like pushing himself a little bit, and that's when he does things like Punch Drunk Love.
Oh, this is the thing. Like, it's the same reason, like, you know, people love Morgan Freeman because he's won an Oscar, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, Morgan Freeman's awesome because he's an actor, man. He works. He will take all the jobs.
Did you
him.
Watch the movie that Sandler did with Don Cheadle where he played a guy with either learning difficulties or who had an accident, but I think he survived 9/11.
No, I've never seen that.
It's a little bit Oscar baity, I feel like.
Sure.
There's a really good performance.
Well, Don Cheadle's in it. That used to be the thing. You know what I mean? Like,
is it Uncut Gems? Hidden Gems?
Uncut Gems.
Yeah, like I keep hearing.
Amazing film.
Incredible.
Came out, well, I saw an Oscar season last year, because I watched that. It was the same time Marriage Story came out. That came out. And yeah, it's phenomenal. I'm shaking my head because I don't want to ruin it, but it is a sad film.
I'm definitely watching it. And maybe we can podcast about it.
Definitely. So moving back to What If.
Yes.
So let's talk a little bit about production for this.
Okay.
So the interesting thing about What If is that two seasons of 18 episodes are already done.
Wow. Okay.
So they already produced this. This all got held over because of COVID, but they were already getting people in to do this at the back end of 2019.
Right. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And so they basically got it all done before COVID hit. Now, there were a few ones that couldn't be done, and they dropped, I think they said they've now dropped it to 9 episodes and 9 episodes, or maybe it's 10 episodes and 9 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, some of the thought behind all this was just amazing. So obviously, this fits into, for those of you listening, like, the MCU is now going to go through another phase, which I think it's good to call it a phase, because this is going to open things up to you in a different way. They're going to start, you know, consuming, as I would say, the multiverse. And that's something that's always existed in comic books. Now, it's not just the MCU. DC has it as well. Image Comics, they all have, you know, multiple storylines in multiple dimensions. It's been something that's been used in comics since time immemorial because you kind of have to. The reason it's been used in comics is because you had a Golden Age, a Silver Age, and now we're in the Bronze Age. At least that's how we describe it.
Mm.
And a lot of the continuity just started getting all messed up. And so you'd have a Golden Age Batman that changes and becomes something different in the Silver Age. You know, and basically the Golden Age was 1930 to 1950. Okay. Silver Age is like 1950, 1970. The Bronze Age is everything after that. Okay. So, but you have these shifts. And a lot of it has to do with the business behind it. And I mean, we could do a whole different podcast on this. Maybe we will one day. But the whole point is, because they were pulp, you know, pulp comics, no one really cared that, at least back in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, that Batman 1 and Batman 2 weren't the same Batman. Or the Joker looked completely different. Or there were three Robins, you know.
Mm.
The problem is, once you get to the Bronze Age, people do start noticing these things. And say, like, listen, you've got all these characters messing about. All on different planets and different, like, all on different worlds. And so the idea of the multiverse comes about. And so the first one I can remember is the Crisis of Infinite Earths.
Right. That's DC.
That's DC. And that's the first one I think that they do. And that basically started showing you and saying, well, actually, this is one of a million Earths. And these are all the different... This is Superman 36 from Earth 3595.
I think that's what the CW kind of did when... Because you remember they had a bunch of, like, The Flash and Arrow and...
And The Flash is... If you really want to explore a single character with multiverse, The Flash is the best.
Flashpoint, right?
Because there's just been tons of them. There's been... You know, they all have Barry or... You know, they have all these similar names, but there's been so many.
Did you ever watch the TV show?
I didn't. It's on those things that at some point I'd like to crack into that and have a look, but it's pretty deep. You know
I mean? There's a lot there. I was on board with Arrow early on, and then I just fell off. But I really got into Flash. I thought it was really, really good. But again, I don't know why. Like, I think it's when a season ends, after you've been watching something week after week after week, I sometimes find myself, like, dropping off and not watching it when it comes back or something like that.
No, I can totally see how that comes. Yeah, it's a kind of thing. Like, I think for me, the DC universe, I used to kind of hold in Smallville. That was like my last DC thing that I loved. I absolutely loved that. That was huge. I love Smallville. But that was like the first time you could see that too on the small screen. I remember...
People forget that.
Believe it or not, like that used to be my show in Korea. So I think I've told you this. Like I would go stay
at Becky. I remember you used to wear your Superman t-shirt.
Yeah. And I would go see Becky. My wife now, girlfriend at the time, lived like an hour away. So I used to have to take this bus back to my house before I started work, and then as I was getting ready and having my breakfast, it would be, you know, lunch by then. We didn't actually start work till 2 o'clock. Yeah. So, but I was having like brunch. I would watch an episode of Smallville every day. I still have the Korean versions of like season 1 through 4. You know what I mean? Like it's hilarious.
But again, like very popular. Like very like it really kind of leaned into the whole serialized drama and stuff like that, didn't
you? It's an interesting thing. It's a someday, like, I guess in the next 10 years of my life, I should start writing some books about this stuff. Because, again, it set the seeds for everything that came later. Mm-hmm. Like, this is the thing. Like, you know, I always go back to Lost, because that was the first show I can remember that the production quality was just so high.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, wow, I've not, you know, X-Files has never done anything, like, this good. Star Trek The Next Generation has never done anything.
Right, there was a very clear delineation between TV and movies.
Right, and like Lost, like a 35mm cut, and you're like, and then all of a sudden J.J. Abrams gets involved in...
Starts looking very cinematic.
You know, and what I think that... You know,
I think HBO could probably be...
Just going to bring them up. So they carried that crown, I think. Yeah, yeah. You know what I mean? Because you go back to like The Sopranos, because Sopranos is brilliant, it's not cut with that same like high HD 35
right.
that you see.
Some of the early seasons are still in the 4:3 aspect ratio. Yeah.
So that's why, because you know, that's the thing. Like Lost story wise, like I think like most people would just like to forget it. You know what I mean? But a lot of us still watch the whole thing.
The annoying thing is, and I think this is why I kind of understand like people who got really mad about Game of Thrones and stuff, but like it was just the disappointment. There was so much build up. And then at the end, it just wasn't quite up to par with the rest of the series, you know? But I think you can say that about so many things, so many movies, you know, the ending's just not quite as good as the rest of the movie.
Definitely. Like, this is a, and we are very tangential today, but like, you know, this is a big thing that people don't always get about horror and why horror can be quite difficult, actually, because things are scary when you don't know what they are. The minute you know what they are, they become infinitely less scary. So every horror movie that I dislike, not every horror movie, a lot of horror movies I dislike go that way because all of a sudden
they reveal
the shadow in the back becomes something else and it becomes this and it becomes this. That's why I was such a fan of J-horror, because J-horror directors, and actually K-horror can fit into this too, I think, they don't feel the need to explain everything. Now, you know, that got to the point where you'd watch films and you were like,
what the fuck is going on?
No idea what you're talking about here. You have to put an actual plot in here. You know what I mean? There has to be a story, not just a ghost walking around.
Yeah.
But in the same sense, like, I like that. I like, you know, one of my favorite horror films of all time, and it's not actually the Japanese original, it's the remake of The Ring.
Oh, interesting. That is a really good, that is a really good film.
But
Naomi Watts, right?
Yeah, and that's my point about not explaining things. You never... it's Samara in that one. And you never really understand what's going on. Other than there's something wrong with her. She can do some really awful things to people. And she comes out through a TV. They never get... You know, the book does. If you read the book, which I have, and the book's really interesting.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is all a virus and blah, 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 blah. And it goes into great detail. And it becomes infinitely less scary because of that.
The
movie, because you really don't know how she does this, but you know she does it, and you can believe that she does it... scares the shit out of you every time. Nice. So that's why I'm like, you know, don't always give it all away. You know what I mean? Like, you gotta hold back with that. Lost, sorry, going back to the original point, I am on a tangent. It's because he gave me caffeine.
Green tea. I mean, it's not super
That's why I drink decaf. Stuff. Everything, you know? Like, Jesus, look at me right now. Just look at the veins, man. Look at the veins. Point with Lost was, where could they have gone with it? So the others, right? Like, because I love that story. I just think quintessentially I really enjoyed... like the act of taking a bunch of people on an island, making them possibly dead, possibly something else, and blah, blah, blah. Then you had the others, which was infinitely creepy because you don't know anything about them. Only thing you know is that the other people on the island, they're doing something horrible. That is a brilliant story. Like a brilliant story. The problem is, it becomes a not brilliant story the minute you find out what the others really are.
Yeah. It's the problem with the whole mystery box, which
that's right. Like, once you know,
you reveal the mystery,
it's the game is kind of over. Yeah. You know what I mean? So maybe you should move into a heist film after that. I don't know. Crazy son of a bitch. What did I just watch that had a heist movie? And I was telling you about this. Who did the heist movie? And I was like, oh god, Ed, it was so heisty. It was good, but it was so very heisty. I can't remember now. At any rate, going back to What If then. So the idea is, one of the cool things that I read about production on this. So showrunners and writers on this one created upwards of like, you know, I think it was like 30, 40 stories for this. And Feige came around and picked his favorites.
Oh, well, okay, that's cool.
So, and the only thing that's slightly...
Lead writer is A.C. Bradley, Ashley Bradley, and the director is Brian Andrews.
So Ashley Bradley, an awesome story. She's a USC grad, which someday I may end up going there because I love the place so much. But USC grad and did Trollhunters.
Which, I kind of like that. I watched a couple of episodes and I was like,
again,
it's pretty cool.
I watched a couple because they compared it to Avatar, which was an amazing show, and it was up there, right?
I'm totally rewatching that.
It had the depth. The reason people love Avatar Last Airbender, by the way, is the depth. Like, it's the character depth that you just can't find in, like, it's similar in story to something like Naruto or something like that, except, like, you just have this amazing, like, characterization. I don't know how they pulled it off in animation. Trollhunters is similar, and that's how she got the gig, I'm pretty sure, because people watched it and said, wow, you've managed to pull off some pretty strong characters with a, you know, not a hokey kid show, but with a pretty, you know.
Yeah. And I think Brian Andrews was a storyboard artist, and he's worked on a lot of, like, the Marvel stuff, as well as, like, you know, Clone Wars, like, way back in the day, Samurai Jack and stuff like that, so.
Right, so they, I mean, animation-wise, I think they had this here. And the animation was chosen, everybody, because, and you really have to kind of think about that one, because a lot of people will say, boo-hoo, why no live action? The reason it's What If. So if you really want to make changes to things, for example, I can tell you about one they're not going to show. So they had one where Spider-Man actually turns into a spider. And then they looked at it and they had to get rid of it because it was that scary that people were like, too much body horror. Yeah, and they're still aiming for the 12 to 14 crowd on this one. That is squarely where they're trying to get the most audience with this one to make sure that they're not. And that's, we talked about that with Suicide Squad. Like, that was Suicide Squad's choice, which was the obvious choice because it's Suicide Squad, to blow out that category and say, we're not going to take teenagers.
Don't worry about that.
We're not going to take kids.
Yeah.
Like, it's an
adult movie. I think it's a smart move. I think that it's kind of what the Clone Wars tried to do. And, you know, they ended up winning a lot of awards and in animation.
Well,
it's interesting
because you talked about the cell shading, and what I was going to say about the animation, which we got tracked off to something else with that. Like, I compare it to the Bad Batch because I'm watching that, and I like the Bad Batch. I mean, the tail end of like the last four episodes, but I find the animation really kiddie. Like, I'm like, it just like my daughter watches some 3D stuff that's just like that.
Yeah.
I just wish they could have like. I would have preferred cel shading because it looks more adult to me. Like, it looks more...
Yeah, and actually, it's much better than it was, like, in the early seasons of...
Do you know what I mean? Like, it's the blockiness of it and things like that. And don't get me wrong, like, people are, you know, free to make... Like, it's not bad animation.
Yeah, no,
it's
really good. And again, like, when I watched this, I was... At first, I was like, oh, okay, how's the animation? And it took me watching the whole thing and what they were able to do. There was a couple of... amazing like sequences which really showed off the cell animation, but it was also like really cinematic as well.
Well, this is the thing they said. The other thing that was commented on by multiple newspapers, not just the Independent, but multiple newspapers have commented, the action sequences in What If are actually the best they've ever seen.
Oh, dude.
In the MCU.
There's the scene... Can we get into specifics?
Definitely. Yeah, we were way past spoilers. We just rambling about other things.
There's the scene where it's part of the montage when she's doing all the heroic stuff and she flies through the window of a Heinkel bomber and she, like, throws people out and then she steps out and it's all in one take. And it's just, like, one of the coolest single-take moves that I've ever seen.
This is why I have to get Ed in an animation studio at some point. Because when he sees what they can do with a piece of paper, he's going to be like, oh, my God!
And the section that really, like, I thought that the cell animation really kind of came to the fore was when they were breaking into the castle at the end.
Yes.
And she's, like, you know, jumping down, and there's just a lot of kinetic movement. It's also, like, a kind of long...
It's the kind of thing... These are the kind of things that, in live action, I usually hate those scenes because it's moving so fast past the camera.
You can't really see anything.
Yeah. Like... That is, you know, people don't always understand that's why The Matrix as an action film is one of my favorites, because I prefer a martial arts style action sequence because at least then I can see the action.
Right. And they do a lot more like wide shots.
Yeah, like because it was Wire Fu and all that stuff. Like, I don't know why I have that preference, but man, I like, one of my pet peeves is like an action sequence.
Dark Knight,
because you have to do those things. Like, you know what I mean?
It makes things cheaper.
You know, shot by shot. You know what I mean? We showed it. Like, that's the way you have to do action sequences because you can't hurt people. Like, you don't want.
Like, if you have like a world class, you know, martial arts stunt team, then
I was talking about QT8 and like, oh man, like, watching that scene from Kill Bill where she hurts herself, like, I felt the physical pain. Like, you see the car just crunch.
Yikes.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
absolutely crazy. And that's what I mean. Like, somebody put this in the movie set memes that we always with this. They talked about stunt doubles.
I love that Facebook.
It's so us, like, right? Like, we still. Hey, if anyone's listening, we would love crew jobs. Like, find us a crew job.
There's
that can
this great
pay
meme,
our bills, but
which is like, you know, someone getting ready to shoot, and it says lights, camera, action, and there's like a Marvel logo next to it, and then just underneath, exactly the same picture, but it's a DC logo, and it just says camera, action.
Yes, yeah, I just saw that one
too. I could not stop laughing at that.
But there was one that was posted where someone was talking about a stunt double, and they're like, listen, like, you may think you're really cool, Mr. Actor or Actress, that can do your stunts, except if they've paid you $2 million to be on the film or something like that, and your face gets broke, then the whole production gets shut down.
Yeah, yeah. I was reading a quote about Danny Trejo and him saying that he doesn't do his own stunts because
That was the one I was thinking of. Yeah, because he's like...
He respects, like, they're professionals. They're like...
And don't get me wrong. Like, I'm not an actor. I love to be. But I'm not an actor, you know what I mean? And, like, you're going to have your own way in life, you know what I mean? I'm not saying actors can't go and say, I want to do my own stunts. I'm just saying, like... That comment from Danny made perfect sense to me because it's like, you 100%. Don't want to shut down the production for the sake of, you know, somebody's broken face. And like I said, seeing Uma Thurman like that, it was like, oh my God. Like, I don't even know you, Uma, and I feel for you.
Mm.
So, favorite parts then of this one?
Oof. Okay, let me look at my notes. I made notes.
Okay.
I
mean, for me, I would say...
Yeah.
Steve Rogers, Iron Man.
Oh, yes.
I mean...
Hydra Stomper.
That was the best.
It was very good. That is powered by a Tesseract.
So to kind of give you some of the background, because this is the funny thing. I wish you could have come and watched this with me, because it was like a trip down memory lane for my poor daughter. Maybe that's why you wouldn't want to be there, because I would have shut up the entire thing.
Okay.
But obviously, my daughter is inquisitive like I am. So the whole time, she wants to kind of know what's going on, given the fact she hasn't ever seen Captain America.
Right.
So I'm like updating her on the fly with all this stuff and being like, well, that's the new Iron Man. But Daddy, I like the old Iron Man. Yeah. Right. But that's his dad. And his dad's made that suit for Steve Rogers, who used to be the old Captain. I mean, this was such a cool conversation we're having with my daughter, who was following things. So I was so proud. I was like, oh, you do know your MCU lore. You know what I mean? But that's the kind of stuff. That's why we used to read the comics. So I was reading, I read, what was it? Volume 2, the one that went from 88 to 98. I would have read that for a couple years. Mm. And man, every month you waited for it. Because it was just cool stuff like the Hydra Stomper. You were like, oh my God, that's the coolest thing I've ever seen. You know what I mean? Like,
do you know what I really appreciated in this, though? Is how they lent into the MCU. Like, there's shot-for-shot recreations of, you know, the moment when the actual Super Soldier Serum goes into Peggy. Is shot for shot what it was in the first Avenger, you know, for example.
This is again why, like, please, like, as my dying wish, and it really is my dying wish, to have an audience and be able to sit just for, God, I could probably talk to him for about a day, but let's just say an hour with Kevin Feige, who keeps all of this in his head. Yeah. But I'm telling you guys, like, I'm not bullshitting when I said you can tell, because everything, as Ed's describing, is so intricately woven. Yeah. They went back to Captain America, but here's the thing. Like, as a writer, this is why I find it interesting. They don't go back to Captain America that we know now from Infinity War. No, they went back to Captain America, First Avenger. First Avenger. Before you knew shit about shit, this was the Tesseract. You didn't even know this was an Infinity Stone.
Yeah.
And I love that. I love that it just played it as tight as it could with that. It was like, you don't know, you know, this is, and that's where the Watcher is really important, because he's saying a single point in time.
Yeah.
And that's where this is so interesting. And that used to be the comic book point as well. It's like, the whole thing is, it's not an alternate reality, because there are, like, read Ultimate Marvel if you want a completely different universe, because they did that. They did a, like, this is a different universe. This was a singular point in time. What if it had changed? And I'm telling you, it gets everybody's noodle going. You're all like,
I gotta say, that's definitely one of my favorite things from the episode, was the intro and the outro from Uatu, which was always in the comic book. It was always the same.
That's right. And it's Jeffrey King.
Jeffrey Wright.
Who is
an amazing actor.
Yeah, why don't you know these guys always better than I do. I did look him up, but why don't you tell us a little bit about him?
He's perhaps most famously known now for being like in Westworld and being like a central part of Westworld.
Right.
But he's been a character actor for years. He's done, you know, like the old gangster movies. And I'm pretty sure he was nominated for an Oscar.
Okay.
I'm not sure if he's won one. But he is one of those guys, right? One of my guys that I'm always like, this guy, whatever
he's in. When I read his background, it was amazing. You know what I mean? Just all the different things he'd been in. And this is a strong... So this is a guy that's on the rise. You know, if you read, as I said, a lot of my research is IMDb and Wikipedia, guys. So it's not like you couldn't do it on your own. And if you look at that stuff, you'll see, like, he's had bit parts, and now moving into more central parts. And now this could be a really good point for him.
Because, you know what I mean? I think he's going to be a big part of the MCU moving forward now.
Yeah, well, they're definitely talking about trying to put him in. So as far as, you know, Wikipedia will give you all the details I can give you on this one. But apparently, like, season one is going to be the characters you know. So it's all going to be, you know, what ifs on existing MCU. And then season two will branch you into the new phase. Okay. And you're going to meet new people. And the what ifs are going to be about some of the newer characters and things like
that's
that.
That's interesting, because A.C. Bradley, who's the showrunner on this and head writer, she's also writing Miss Marvel.
That's...
Which is...
No. Is it Miss Marvel?
Yeah.
It's because she... The reason they gave that to her
is
she wanted to write Captain Marvel and they turned her down.
Oh, okay.
So that's how she got the gig for What If, because they looked at her stuff and they said, nah, she's actually pretty good, but we didn't want to give her Captain Marvel, so they've given her Miss Marvel, which is, you know, if you don't know about Miss Marvel, this is where it helps to have an MCU geek on it. Miss Marvel will be the character at the end of WandaVision that has all the powers all of a sudden starts happening. That's Miss Marvel. Pretty sure.
No, I think it's... Isn't it the she was like the first Muslim superhero, and...
I thought it was going to be, and I could be completely wrong with this, I don't know because I haven't researched. Mm. I always thought Miss Marvel was going to be the...
Monica Rambeau.
Yeah, Monica Rambeau.
Right. I mean, in the comics, she's Photon, I think, is like her superhero name. But they have changed things, so maybe. But I thought they did like a big... It was a big deal because of her
being... No worries. I will certainly research because I'm usually wrong on stuff like that. So I thought Miss Marvel was going to be... Because she is being set up to be...
Right, yeah. I think she's definitely being set up to be something. Could be Miss Marvel. But the other thing that I really... I love... Like so many times in my notes. Okay. But I loved seeing Red Skull again. Like, he's genuinely one of my favorite, like, bad guys.
I know, you love World War II. You know what
yeah.
I mean? It's, and he is very Nazi, very, like,
and
Wolfenstein.
Yeah, very iconic as well, you know?
Yeah, like, no, he looks like a Nazi. You know what I mean? He looks like
a Nazi.
Like, yeah. I've been watching Inglourious Basterds. Well, he's from Nashville, so I was like, is that how I would say Nazi? Would I say Nazi? I'm not from Nashville. I'm from a little bit up from there, but that would be the accent from where I come from.
Can I ask you a question, story-wise?
Lots of questions, yeah.
What do you think about... Because I felt that one of the central themes for this episode was... So, where Steve Rogers, it's a man out of time, right? It's a man from the past trying to live in present day and stuff like that. Mm. This was a really interesting twist in making it a woman from the 40s who's now got superpowers, but having to deal with being a woman in the 40s and having superpowers. You know what I mean?
I mean, that harkened back to Agent Carter. So if you watch the two seasons of that, like, that is
so good. Like, why did they stop that?
They just did. You know what I mean? It's one of those things. I think everybody said that, but it was viewer numbers. They just couldn't get, it was a primetime slot on ABC. Mm. It's again where I think streaming helps, because streaming has its primetime stuff, but it also has all its niche stuff, because you don't know who's watching when, and it doesn't really matter. You know what I mean? Like, the 8 o'clock slot could be anybody, because it's just whoever's going to watch when.
Mm.
So Agent Carter on something like Disney Plus, I think, survives. It can go on for maybe season 3, maybe season 4.
Do you think they get her into a live action? I mean, Hayley Atwell's still
I know
out
there. They're really, like, from the notes that were done on this, they said that particular character, so Captain, not Captain America, Captain Britain.
Captain Carter, yeah.
Captain Britain is going to be, prominent and show up again.
Yeah.
So
they never actually called her Captain Britain, right?
I don't know. Like it's
because I did wonder about that.
There was a Captain Britain, but you'd have to read Excalibur, which was in the '90s.
Which
that
is
was
a whole Arthurian thing.
Oh man, it was one of my favorite.
Right?
No, not at all.
Oh, no?
As far as I don't think so. God, I mean, I haven't read them since I was like 10 or 11. Mm, but no, the Excalibur was the British X-Men.
Yeah. Oh no, yeah, exactly.
They were awesome. You know? And yes, Excalibur comes from Arthurian legend.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, that was like, and there was a Captain Britain in that, and he's
and
a guy.
When I was Jack Brado or something like that, like, because they name checked him in Endgame.
Oh, did they?
Like Peggy, when there's a scene where Captain America, they've traveled back. And he sees, like, Peggy Carter.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, through a window and stuff. And she actually name-checks Captain Britain, which is kind of cool.
Because it was him, and
But I did wonder if they're going to go with... Is she Captain Britain or not?
It would be cool. I mean, it would be cool to see the matchup. So if you could get Captain America and Captain Britain in the same thing through a multiverse matchup...
When I was a kid, I always loved this, the idea that there was a Captain Britain, you know?
Because
there was no Captain Spain. although they should have been, goddammit. But yeah, the costume was also pretty cool.
There was crossover from, like, so you had, remember New Mutants, watching that one?
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
You had Maisie Williams' character,
the werewolf,
because she is Scottish, and so she's in Excalibur when she's not in the New Mutants, so there was that kind of crossover from everything. Mm.
I didn't read the comics. I saw them kind of from afar. You know, I'd see pictures in my brother's role playing game and stuff. But I always felt that Captain Britain, was he like a not very popular character, or like?
Yeah, I would say so. Like, I don't know. It was definitely.
I don't want to say lame.
Is Marvel at the time, and this is things like this make me want to open a comic book studio as well. But like. It was Marvel at the time reaching out to their 2000 AD crowd.
Right.
You're always going to have, 2000 AD guys, I read a lot of it now. Mm-hmm. I didn't back, I mean, I did way back in the day, but I have like a 30-year gap between when it came out. What I would say, though, is that, I mean, it does bring a hardcore following. If you like 2000 AD, it's the same thing every week. Mm-hmm. And like, they really do a good job at
it's
that.
It's pretty cool. You've given me a few comics, and I've never really... read much 2080, but I really like some of the stories that
they, that's why that I said like read that extreme one I gave you, because that literally is all it's a three-parter, so you're getting the third part of a three-part, but that big book has literally every comic from 77, like all the animal from this particular storyline that would have
that's
featured.
Cool. Yeah.
And the thing I liked about it is that it was much more comic strippy than it was comic booky, and I've always liked that. I've always liked that I can read something for 2 minutes and move on to the next.
It always frustrates me a little bit because I'm always like, fuck, I want to read more about this.
That's why I like it though, right?
But it's smart. It's smart business because then you would definitely get the next issue.
Yeah, Action Comics, right? You want the new one, right? Mm. So, you know, it's just... I think you could see those kind of matchups.
Yeah.
Going back to... But again, the popularity of Excalibur in the 90s, I think, went along with, you know, Spice Girls and the world's
right.
love.
Yeah, Britpop.
Britpop. Yeah, you know, I think that's... And it's really sad because, like, nowadays, I'm like, that's what we need to get back to in England, guys. Like,
yeah,
100%. Y'all need to be more Britpop,
yeah.
You know? And people get mad when I say it, but I'm like, no, but there was a time not
just
long
hopeful.
Ago, 20 years
time,
ago,
yeah.
where people loved this country. And don't get me wrong, I'm an American, so I know how it is.
Mm.
Sometimes people love my country. When Obama
sometimes,
was in,
yeah.
it was the best thing in the world to be an American. Then, you know, before it was Trump, when I was in Spain with Trump, people used to, like, spit on me about it. I'm like, I don't even know that guy,
you
I'm
mean
sorry.
With Bush?
Bush, sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry. That's what I mean. Like, Bush, then Obama, and then you get Trump again, and people are like, oh, your country sucks. And it's like, well,
yeah.
we do make some poor choices in presidents. That's all I can say, you know?
The last thing that I really enjoyed was Armin Zola. Toby, I can't remember his last name, but he's the German scientist.
Yeah. I'm not going to help you.
Yeah. There's that moment where she goes into a cell, and he says, I'm not going to tell you anything. And it smash cuts to Peggy Carter. He told me everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just like, great, you know, good sense of humor.
He's always been that classic character
yeah.
in this. Even when because he appears not just in, I think he's in Agent Carter as well.
Yeah, I think so.
Because he appears in a couple episodes, I think in the second season, maybe the first season. But he always had that kind of stooge kind of like.
Toby Jones, that's his name.
You know what I mean? It just, that was the character he was playing. I guess,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
Loved him.
So.
More Nazis, more Armin Zola.
Oh, you Brits in your World War II. It was the best of times, the worst of times. It's like, you know, can we get a little topical on here? Like, everybody right now is crying about the exodus from Afghanistan. I'm going to go there, Ed.
We're getting political.
Wow, it's just because it's plastered all over the news that Joe Biden is a failure for what's happening. People are mad here. And listen, like, I totally get the atrocities that will be exuded on the Afghani people because of this. I am not... in any shape or form, condoning that or saying that that's a good thing. What I am saying is, like, America does this, okay? We had the Vietnam War. And if you haven't listened to my mom and my stepdad and all the rest of the hippies talk about that for hours on end, you can. Because you know what? Like, that was the same thing for them.
Mm.
They fought 20 years in that country. Most people don't know that. But we started fighting in Vietnam in the
50s. Yeah, that's right.
And we left in 71.
When we were soldiers.
And
good film.
The famous, you know, Saigon flag of when we lost Vietnam.
Mm.
It's the same here, guys. Like, I have a buddy who used to be my best friend. And then he came back from this war a little bit crazy. And, you know, like, it's going to be tough on guys like that. That literally would serve two tours under Bush and do that. But is it the way the world works? Like... sad but true. Like, what's the alternative? That we just constantly put men to risk their lives? I don't know. Like, I don't have an answer. I'm just saying people who are online right now all thinking that they have an answer, I think you need to kind of look at history and just say, like, well, you know, it sucks and it doesn't suck. You know what I mean? At least we're not sending people over there anymore, but it sucks for the people that are over there. It'd be nice if they could defend themselves, and it doesn't look like they're going to be able to. So that is my 10-second, you know, 10-minute political rant on that one. But it's just, guys, like, all I'd ever say is, you know, live in the moment right now. We're post-COVID, and calm down about things. The world is still on fire. It pretty much always is. And this is just an instance of two countries saying we don't want to participate in the fire anymore. I think it's terrible, but, you know, in the same sense, like, people's lives are actually going to be saved by not doing that as well.
Mm.
So, you know, again, before we judge, let's think about it.
History will be the judge, right?
Always.
Mm.
Or the people who write history.
True.
That's the truth.
So, last question from me.
Okay.
What is there any particular episodes that you're looking forward to, or is there any storyline that you really kind of wish they would... like go for with the what ifs?
I was reading all the different ones because they've basically set out a lot of the ones that they're going to do,
at least in the first season.
Right, the T'Challa Star Lord one's going to be awesome. There's apparently an awesome. The best one is supposed to be the love story with Doctor Strange. I have a funny feeling I'll enjoy that.
Yeah,
the love stories are. You know what the funniest thing was? You know how when I talk about Donald Glover, and kinship and stuff like that. One guy I do have a semi kinship with, Adam Stovall, right? Mm. Like, it's not just that he's from Cincinnati. It's not just that he writes films I like. It's that when I look at his art, I'm like, I think he understands kind of where I look at things as well. Mm-hmm. And so we talked to him about Mythic Quest, right? Because he was asking, he's like, Apple TV for a little while. What am I supposed to watch? And everybody gave him suggestions. Mm-hmm. He's famous now. So everybody, but I threw in the stuff in there because we watch a lot of Apple TV.
We are.
And I said, Mythic Quest. Fanboys. And he came back to me and he was like, dude, episode 5. And I just couldn't stop laughing. I'm like, if you had Ed in the room, like, he would have understood. Because it's the love story. Yeah. You know, it's the romance is the thing. And I think that's one of his, it's one of his things. So I know me. I love a good love story. I still haven't written one yet, but love a good one. I will. Yeah, no, it's in the cards. It's just, literally, it's in the cards.
Hey.
But, yeah, I just think that's going to be one of the good ones. But the T'Challa Star-Lord one, awesome. Mm. There's apparently one that was supposed to, I don't know if they chucked it because it's part of Guardians of the Galaxy 3 now. But that was some of the stuff they were talking about. They chucked some of these other ones and just turned them into films. The Multiverse of Madness is one of the what-ifs that they were thinking about.
Oh, shit, that's cool.
Yeah, and that's then some of the stuff that's happening in No Way Home, and again, this is why I stopped
before.
It's
such a fertile ground for stories, isn't
It is if you have a guy like Kevin Feige or Dan Harmon. It'd be the other one I said that knows how to intricately weave. Because the problem with the multiverse is infinite.
Get out of hand.
It's infinite, right? And I had to try to explain this to my daughter because my daughter is a scientist as well. Like, not a real scientist, but not yet at least. But she loves math. She loves science. And so she really wanted me to try to explain the multiverse to her. And this was one of our forest walks. My daughter and I go walking the forest for hours talking about everything. And I had to try to explain it to her. And she was like, what do you mean everything's infinitely possible? I think anything's possible. So in a multiverse, every single possible way you can think of something happening happens. And then even the things you can't think of happen as well. Mm. And so that's a huge spectrum of everything. You know what I mean?
Anything's possible.
So again, it's the same thing with screenwriting. Mm. If you've got someone who's good at that, then you can just dial in on it and say, okay, well, what do people want to see? Right. What are the stuff, you know, go back to that What If book about the major historical battles. They knew which 20 battles to put in that book that would make everyone read it. You know, pick World War II, Alexander the Great against the Persians, you know.
Trafalgar, big, stuff
exactly,
like that.
Exactly. Big battles that people loved. You know what I mean? That's what you got to do with this. You can't, you know, that's why Kevin looked at the whole list along with, you know, and I keep saying Kevin, but there's Wider Brahms on this one. Mm. Alonso made some, Victoria Alonso and Luis de Esposito. Mm. There's the new ones. I don't know if I got the name. Is it Wenderbrom? Widerbrom?
Let me have a quick look.
Chris, I think it's Chris Wenderbrom. He's new, at least on that list for me. I don't
Brad really, Vinderbaum.
Don't normally see his name, but he's another person that's contributing on this because he's got a background, I believe, in doing this. And they all are looking at this and kind of giving their input as to what the best stories are. I mean, that's what your producers are supposed to do, but that is why you need a producer, because every one of story is not one you want to hear. You know what I mean?
It does feel like it's such a shame that there isn't a, you know, like franchise Oscar or something like that, because It's such a difficult thing. So many plates to spin. We've seen studios fail with, you know, with IP and stuff like that.
It's all right. Kevin won't get you a franchise Oscar, but when we do make that film that blows him away, he will give us the $10 million bonus we're owed for the great film that we made.
But I wish there was. I mean, obviously, the recompense is the fact that his films are making money, and he's obviously having a lot of success. But I wish there was some way to recognize him, because to me, it's next level. And again, also Victoria Alonso.
That's what I mean. I think what you're talking about is doing an award show. The problem is that, like, they've tried this before, right? So you've tried award shows away from the Oscars. And the worst thing about it is that everyone still goes back to the Oscars. And it always pisses me off, because you do have other, you know, Screenwriters Guild and stuff like that aren't afraid to tackle, you know, action movies.
Comedies.
Because guys, like, that's always why I was a real snob about the Oscars for a long time. And in the opposite way, punk rocker that I am, like, fuck the Oscars. Yeah. Not that I didn't like Oscar films, but I was like, people don't understand the business is so much bigger than that. Yeah. You know what I mean? The films that I like,
it's a very niche group of people selecting the kinds of films that they like.
Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with that. No. I'm just saying, like, you know, like Ed's saying,
it doesn't have
like,
to be for everyone.
The real pillars of Hollywood, as it would be. Let's just say it that way. You know, maybe give them a Hollywood star. That's what I would do. That epitomizes people that have literally made something different about.
Put their this
has changed industry. Hollywood. This has changed the way that 100%. Films are made. So, and Georgia.
Yeah.
You have to start the Georgia Walk of Fame soon.
Yeah. The one that I'm most excited for? Marvel Zombies.
Ooh.
I can't wait, dude.
Did you read any of the zombie comic books?
I didn't know, but I
was it Marvel or DC that did that? I think both did.
I'm pretty sure that Marvel did like a series.
Oh,
of
there
comics
was,
and
yeah,
stuff. Yeah. But like, I came to the zombie genre very late. Like, it was Shaun of the Dead that convinced me. Oh, these are fucking great, and you know. So I'm not as burnt as I think some people have been with the zombie
genre. Yeah, it's the kind of thing that like listen, because you say you came late, but like that's what I mean. Zombie films had always been there. For horror fans at least. Like, you know, White Zombie's the first one, but then there's all these other ones. When I was a kid, The Serpent and the Rainbow was the big one because it had a big, big budget. But then, you know, all the George Romero's and I mean, my you know, education on horror came from a lot of zombie films. And then you went through this period, this post, you know, and I really, this is something I'd like to put on the podcast, because if I'm right about it, then Jesus, like, epitomize this on my gravestone. Like, I believe we write sometimes about what's going to happen. Now, that's going to sound, like, out there to some people, but I just look at the trends of Zeitgeist, and then I look at the stuff that comes out. We made a shitload of, oh my god, everybody's going to get something and dies, about 10 years ago. Not just Walking Dead. I mean, it was everything. It was everywhere. And then, funny enough, 10 years later, we all suffer the first, you know, the first global pandemic, at least that we can remember.
Right. I mean, you know, that didn't need too much Nostradamus. But I get what you're saying.
Do you see what I'm saying? Like, I just don't want people to think, like, I'm not trying to be Nostradamus. I'm just saying, like, when you're writing, like, I think some of that
is the worries
that Carl Jung bit that you're pulling from.
And also scientists keep warning about the dangers of this.
Exactly.
And screenwriters, you know, pick on stuff like that. But what was I reading? Somebody, like, made a comment about, it was the vaccine, the anti-vax people, who were like pointing to a film where, you know, the vaccine was
I Am Legend.
Yeah, there you go, thank you.
I Am Legend, which is actually a remake of the Omega Man,
right? Yeah, the Charlton Heston film, right?
Yes.
I Am Legend
is so much better.
Yeah, I've never seen
it. Don't get me wrong, Omega Man, that has that famous line, is it secret, is it safe?
Oh, really?
Is it safe?
I thought that was from
Lord of the Rings, right? Yeah. No, Ian McKellen's, they're stealing that from Omega
that's
Man.
So interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, it's of its time.
As
right?
Quentin says, don't pay homage, steal. I know, I agree. I completely agree. Like, I, you know, I'm writing a screenplay now, I'm like, I'm stealing. Like, I'm definitely stealing.
But yeah, the director was like, oh, please, guys, come on, that was just a movie. Do you know what I mean?
Like, well, like some of the stuff I hear, like, listen to some of the, keep in mind, I have parents in the Midwest right now. So, and this isn't trying to say everything about all the Midwestern people.
We love you, Midwest.
It's about a 50-50 divide these days. But the other half is like, don't you know all the Mexicans are bringing that in? This is where the virus came from.
Oh, my God.
Those immigrants are bringing the virus in the country. I'm not getting any vaccine. That's what the government wants you to do. I'm gonna put a chip in your arm. You'd be dead and turn into a zombie.
I gotta use you for some Rumble Slam videos.
Definitely, because I grew up there, so I have the accent. Like, that's what you won't know about me, guys. Like, yes, I have a New York accent because my parents are from New York. Yes, I have a Midwest accent. Yeah, I grew up with those guys, and I don't hate them. Like, a lot of people think I do, and I don't. I, you know, I love my Midwestern brethren.
Of course.
Even the racist ones. Some of them were my best friends. They just didn't know who I was. So, but yeah, I mean, going back to your zombie thing, like, yeah, the zombie thing just got overdone. Like, way overdone.
I think, I can see that.
I think that comes down to, don't crucify me for saying this, Z, but from sloppy writing. You know, like, like Walking Dead got sloppy. It got boring.
Yeah, I mean, off. Yeah,
I mean, it's on. It went on for 10 seasons, plus it has a spinoff, plus it has, like, how many ways can we actually see a zombie apocalypse?
Right. Did you watch Army of the Dead?
No. No,
I'm
currently on a Schneider boycott.
I get that.
Which I will get over, Mr. Schneider. If you want to hire me or have me do any of your stuff, I will get over it, I'm sure. I just, Justice League was a bit much for me.
I'll be honest, like, just zombie films in general are a kind of, the guilty pleasure for me.
You know? Yeah, yeah. No, Becky the same way. As I said, I should let you know that. So if you ever want to have like Zombie Night, she's the other one to watch them with.
There's this New Zealand film. It's called Black Sheep.
I love Black Sheep.
Oh, so good,
so
isn't
good,
it?
So good, right?
It's so good.
Zombie Sheep.
And then there was Wormwood as well, which is like an Australian...
That's a better... See, and that's a really good example of where there were good stuff coming mixed in. That was an amazing film.
Yeah,
especially
yeah.
that indigenous actor that's in that is one of my all-time favorite guys.
Brilliant, yeah. I follow Bianca Bradley, who's the girl in that. She's lovely.
Yeah.
And she's Australian. Oh, but yeah, I can't wait for the Marvel Zombies.
It'll be awesome. And everybody will cheer again. And maybe it will be, you know, as long as we don't, like, I think zombie movies will always be here to stay because they epitomize certain things, and same as vampires, same as werewolves.
Yeah, like, and new generations, like, take new things
and that's,
from it.
I just think that's what it needs. Now, I'm not sure I'm the person to write that or that we are the people to do that, but somebody's going to take that zombie genre and do something cool with it.
Something cool and interesting.
You know, I think that the long extension of where it went too far, and I didn't dislike the film, I really liked the film, but it was definitely, you know, we had jumped the shark by that point, was World War Z.
Yeah, yeah, I know what you mean.
I'm never sure that the zombie works big budget. Like, why?
Yeah,
like,
it's kind of the antithesis of what the zombie genre kind
of
is.
Well, if I'm going to do zombie big budget, I would change it more to something like The Mummy. Mm. Why? Because then I need an excuse to have literally thousands of zombies doing something. Yeah. You know what I mean? If I'm going to do a zombie thing, I'm going to do a couple of them. You know what I mean? Like,
I loved 28 Days Later. 28 Weeks Later, I wasn't that crazy about. I think by that time, I was like, okay, there's a few too many, like, people are trying to make money. And
that was the thing. I was the opposite way around. Because people loved 28 Days Later, and I hated it because it wasn't traditional.
Right. And yeah, I mean,
people
I can
loved it
that.
Because it broke the barrier. And then when I sat, I think I told you this, I watched it in college, and then, like, I remember I got in this huge argument with my girlfriend, and we watched tons of films, and then she was like, it was a good film. I was like, it's a fucking shit. Yeah. Like, don't tell me that. Because that's just how I am.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then I went away, and I went back to the theater without her and watched it a second time, and I was like, no, you're right. It was a pretty good film. It just wasn't what I was expecting.
Yeah. I you know, Danny Boyle is one of... I mean, if Edgar Wright is right at the top, Danny Boyle is like half
an inch behind. It's timing, because people are like, oh, but he showed, you know, in the end, the humans are the real monsters. Like, dude, George Romero has been doing that in his zombie films since, like, day one. Like,
exactly.
It's just, it was done really well in 28 Days Later.
Yeah.
But 28 Weeks Later, let me tell you, like, I love the honesty of that film. The opening scene, I always tell you, I don't know if this would be me or not, but the guy looks at his wife and kid who are behind the door and the zombies are coming at them. He's on the other side of the door, and instead of being like, I'm going to open the door and help them, he runs. He gets in a boat and he takes the fuck off. And I'm sorry, but I was like, being the lawyer that I am, I'm like, that's exactly what would happen 9 times out of 10. And the dude would later be like, oh man, like, I was such a bad guy. But dude would be still alive.
Yeah. But yeah, I like I like the idea of a Marvel spin on zombies. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I think
let's see what they do with it.
That,
you know?
might work really well. And I do. I'm also with you. The dark Doctor Strange, like
The love story, dark Doctor Strange, I think will be good. You know, Star-Lord will be good. There was another one they were mentioning. As I said, all the old characters coming back for new things. So that's where you're really going to find some interesting things. I mean, you know, Hydra Smasher, like, Hydra Stomper, like...
And there's, like, Party Thor is, like, the Thor version that we're going to get. And I think it's... Chris Hemsworth is such an underappreciated comedian that I can't wait.
Not Liam Hemsworth now.
No. Wait, oh, no, sorry. I did what you do.
I don't know. I do this to you.
No, you did. You fucked with me.
They are the brothers Hemsworth. I will meet all. I will meet none.
It is
when you come to my production office, you will all come together, or you will not come at all, because I will not be able to distinguish one Hemsworth from the other Hemsworth.
Because
you're all awesome.
Thor is definitely Chris, because Chris Evans, Chris Hemsworth, the Chris's.
Luke Evans? Luke? Oh, is there a conspiracy going on here? That goes for the Evans.
Cloned.
No, Wilson. Sorry, Luke Wilson is what I'm thinking. Wilson's, not Chris
Luke Evans.
Luke Chris Evans. Luke Wilson. Whenever you people show up with your families, the Baldwins, you all better be there. All of you at the same
including
time.
Including Steven.
I love Steven.
He's crazy.
I'm telling you, dude, that was my movie. What was it? The eco one.
Oh, yeah, Biodome.
Biodomes! I love that film. Oh, my God. Like, I love that film. Like, you don't understand the that's up there with The Pest. Like, The Pest is, like, one of my top three, like, comedies that I don't want anyone to ever know that I love because of that bad. But Biodomes, like, oh, watch that film.
You can
film.
Dance if you wanna.
You can leave your friends behind. Because if your friend dance, and if they don't dance, then they're no friends of mine.
So good.
So yeah, we're going to see some cool shit with this one. The Thor thing, I thought they'd already done that because they were talking about Love and Thunder. And one of the ideas had already been spun off to do Taika's film with Jane, who's going to be, you know, the new Thor.
However,
in the comic book, like I told you, there's loads of Thors. Like, well, there's kind of loads of Thors. There was another guy, and I always was pissed off because this is what happens when you're a kid, right? This is actually a decent story to kind of tail this off on. So like, 10 years old, buy a comic book, and I'm reading Thor, right? And this is a cool Thor, right? He's got, like, a short beard. And he looks very, like, modern Viking, I would say. You know, had the beard, had the whatever. And then we get to, like, 10 issues in. And I was a guy who would go back and buy the same one so I could get the story right. The 10th episode, like, the 10th issue I bought, the real Thor comes back. And he's the long-haired, no beard. He looks, like, just not my style. And I was like,
classic Thor.
Who the hell is this guy? And he basically replaces. He's like, no, I'm going to take Mjolnir back. You can be... And they give this guy, like, some other role as, like, Doom, blah, blah, blah. And I was so pissed off. I was like, but he's the real Thor. You can't just come back, Thor, and say, I want my hammer back. Yeah, I mean, I was really mad for general. I was telling my dad all about it. He's like, it's a comic book, Jay. I'm like, it's bullshit, Dad. They got rid of my favorite character.
I got to say, my favorite Thor that we've seen on the screen thus far is Throg. Like 2 seconds.
Wasn't that the alligator or no?
No, that's the frog in the jar in Loki as it kind of like pans down.
Oh, that's the other stuff you're going to see. The other stuff that's going to be awesome is Howard the Duck is definitely going
to
be.
Oh, yeah, that's
cool.
Seth
Green is going to reprise Howard the Duck.
That's awesome.
That's the thing to check. So
I loved Howard the Duck, the movie. I know I shouldn't.
Never saw it. Never saw
really?
It. But I know
that. We have to watch it.
Yeah, the mythicism behind that film.
Dude,
you know, as being.
There is, like, duck-human sex in that film. Oh, that's what I'm saying.
All right, well, you know what that'll take before we're able to watch that film. Yeah. We're not going to say it on the podcast. Okay? And we will do that. And then
no, I'm excited. I'm excited for Howard the Duck.
We definitely would get a lot of viewers for that one. Because, as I said, it's one of those that people are like, super, I love that film.
It's super out there as well. And the comic book and stuff like that as well. Like, super, like, edgy.
Bizarre, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I'll have to give it a check out then. But that's the thing to do. So last bit of wisdom to give you. Go to the Wikipedia page and look at all the actors that are slated to be there. That will give you your hints, because Vision's in there. That will give you your hints as to what they're going to do. The whole point was, I mean, these are all voice actors now, but they wanted to get as many back as possible.
Yeah, I was a little sad that Chris Evans didn't, you know, reprise...
Well, there's a bit of kerfuffery with that. Now, the commentary I had, and I went to the article behind it. Now, Dax, which is played by
Dax.
Dax from Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, Drax, yeah.
Drax, sorry.
So I'm thinking like Deep Space Nine. Dax, yeah, I know Dax.
That's what I was thinking because we've been talking Deep Space Nine. So Drax, sorry. Yeah, Drax is played by David...
Batista?
Batista, there is. I was... Yeah, it's because it's Latin last names, and I want to replace it with another Latin last name, which I won't do, David Batista. But he, like, got off and said, like, well, they never invited me.
Oh.
And then, you know, obviously Marvel was like, pretty sure we did. Maybe this got lost with your manager. There sounded like there was a truckload of scheduling difficulties and that they needed to get it done quickly
and
get people in the booth and out of the booth. Right. And you know how Ed does voice acting, so he's been there before. I'd love to do some if you ever get the job coming through. You know what I mean? But... they couldn't get everybody to do everything. And so, they said they focused more on making sure that they had a character that they liked rather than making sure they recreated the sound of the existing character.
Right. I mean, it's funny because, like I said, I'm a big fan of Red Skull. And I was so happy when he came back in Endgame. But obviously, Hugo Weaving was like, nah, thanks, I'm good. But Ross Marquand, who... is like, if you ever get the chance, he's done like a GQ, like many voices video online.
Okay.
And he does like, you know, De Niro and like a bunch of stuff. And he nails Hugo Weaving.
Well, it's the kind of thing, like, I always remember, this is another stupid story, Ed. I remember watching Aladdin, the series, after watching the movie, right? So, movie had Robin Williams.
Yeah.
The series, and this is when I was a kid.
Yeah.
The series had Homer Simpson Dan, is it Dan Cantrell?
Dan Castellaneta.
Castellaneta. Yeah. See, I'm horrible with names. Dan Castellaneta. And now I can tell the difference. Now I know that's Homer Simpson playing it, but at the time, like...
Didn't bother you.
Who cared?
Yeah, no, it's
like, it's
true.
I didn't notice, you know what I mean?
I get excited when, you know, obviously, you know, Chadwick Boseman, but the idea that Michael B. Jordan's going to be reprising Killmonger.
I think that's a lot of the allure of watching some of these people kind of dive into even better roles in voice acting. You know what I mean? Like Captain Britain, like, that's what Agent Carter should have had. You know, Hayley Atwell, like, why they didn't put you in a bigger role. Like, there are reasons outside of you just being amazing, I'm sure, but
yeah.
I would have cast you for something much bigger.
I mean, yeah, I think they didn't know what they had.
No. I wouldn't either. Did the camera hits her and you're like, Jesus. Right?
she's got like old movie star
quality. Right, that's what I mean. You know exactly. Like, so when Joe Johnson finally hit it, it was like, oh, I'm in the money. And it was like, you know what I mean? You can't buy that. Yeah. Well, you can, I guess.
I liked the shout out to the actress. Not Tony Stark, Howard Stark. He says, "Oh, I've hung out with, I can't remember her name."
Oh yeah, it wasn't Inga Bergman. It was Hedley.
Yes,
Hedley Lamarr.
Hedley Lamarr.
I'm thinking of Hedley Lamarr from Blazing Saddles, and it's a joke on the name Hedley Lamarr, who's a famous German actress.
Yeah, and she also helped like create.
She didn't teach me any German, you know.
Yeah. But she helped to create, like, guidance for torpedoes, like radio control guidance.
Really? I never knew that.
And the Wi-Fi that we use is based on her. Like, she was a PhD, like...
I never knew that.
She's amazing.
I knew about her acting chops.
Read up on her, because she is, like...
I I will say, you know, things we're discovering. I have a new... I never went to Germany in my time. I come from a German town, so a German-American town.
Mm.
Cincinnati is known for its German population. But I never learned German, and I never really had any desire to go there.
Mm.
Film has definitely broke the door open on that one, because the more you dive into Berlin film scene, oh my God. And then the funny thing was, because of that, because I love music and you know that, I started listening to the Berlin music scene.
Mm.
And now, like, my poor family, like, once a week they have to, I have this playlist. And you know, my wife laughs because, like, do you understand anything that they're saying? I'm like, no, I don't speak German, but I love the songs.
Yeah.
Like, I just think they're good. I think I played one for you when you were in Cologne called Zeit.
Mm.
There's culture there, man. Mm. And there is deep culture that I, you know, this is a cool thing when I love, this is why I used to love to travel, when you discover something that wasn't there before, or at least that you didn't know, is really what I should say. That just, like, so yeah, there'll be lots of German cinema going in through my head these days.
Do me a favor then, because I've been putting this off for a long time, and my brother is getting so annoyed with me now. There's a TV show called Dark.
Ooh.
Which is
that on, German?
Yeah, it's German. Okay. And it's on Netflix, I think.
It is. It's been on for a while now.
Yeah, I know. And my brother won't shut up about it. He's like, dude, you are going to love this. Like, right, it's so dark. Let's watch the first episode and then reconvene and see if it's something worth it.
We will watch the Germans.
Yeah.
Okay, folks. Well... anything else you want to add about what it is?
No.
We took one episode and stretched it into fucking everything today.
Into like an hour and 20 minutes.
Yeah. That's how we do it, yo.
It was just great, man. I you know, World War II, Nazis, you know, woman in the 40s, like that whole theme. I really, really enjoyed it. And it wasn't as kiddie as I thought it might be, you know?
Absolutely.
Like, because... You watch the Clone Wars and even the Bad Batch, and there's definitely, we're trying to appeal to children.
Definitely.
Here, I don't think they're ignoring the children. You know, it's not like, oh yeah, we don't want.
No, I think they're treating it like how Marvel is always treated, being like, bring your kids along, but make sure you're sat next to them.
You know
what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Again, like Black Widow, I think I've told Becky, like, you probably better watch this first.
Yeah.
Because that's the kind of mom she is. And don't get me wrong, like,
I mean, after the Falcon and Winter Soldier, you know, situation. Well,
it's one of those things that, like, you know, my wife and I do argue about this because I've always been against, like, the censorship and it's going to ruin your kids' life. Yeah, but then you have a young daughter and you realize, like, you do... there are things that you expose her to, you can't not expose her right. to. And so that, in Black Widow, deals with a lot of those. You know, I think sex is like the last thing with my daughter. Like, we haven't had the talk with her. She's seven, so I'm not going to have the talk with her.
Right.
And not that I'm, like, it's the whole thing. It's not about shame. Like, we've had the body talk. Yeah. Like, I don't want her to be ashamed of her body.
Mm.
But in the same sense, like, I also don't really think she needs or cares to know about what sex is.
Let her enjoy herself, like, as a child for as long as she can.
That's what I mean. Yeah, you know, so that's why, you know, it was like giving it to her mom and saying, like, you know, watch this and then tell me how you would address it. Because that's the only thing that I wouldn't know how to do.
Yeah, it is a tough one because it is about, like, you know, child...
Same thing happened. I don't know if I ever told you about, like, race. Because obviously, as anyone who listens to this podcast knows, race is a big deal for me now. Mm. Like, it wasn't always, but it is now a huge deal for me and something that I've looked at. And so my daughter knows, and my wife knows that I'll go off about it sometimes about talking about things. And so she did a musical in Hairspray. Mm. And then, as you know, the reward was they all got to go, you know, mom got the tickets and they all went downtown to see a production of Hairspray. Mm. And obviously one of the key things in Hairspray is the fact that they're fighting segregation in Baltimore.
Right.
Which, like, obviously I wanted to wax lyrical about, but didn't know, you know, what to say about how to deal with it. Definitely wasn't going to hold anything back from my daughter if she wanted to know. But she turned to me and she said, "Dad, I don't really see color." And I'm like, "Okay." And she's like, "I'm just being honest with you." She's like, I could talk to you about it, but she's like, "I don't really know what you'd be talking about because at my..." And what she meant is, at my age, Dad, I don't see color. And that's what I mean when I have a very mature daughter. She knows how to talk to me and say, like, "I know what you're about to get on about. Like, save it. Save it for when I can understand what you're talking about better."
Right. Yeah.
That's why she likes math. She can understand math. She can understand science. Numbers, there's no mystery to it.
There's an episode of Blackish that I really, really want you to watch.
It's on Disney Plus now, I think, right?
Yeah.
That's why I've been watching Atlanta.
Yeah. And it's like, it's about, like, a, you know, family talking to their kids about...
Which is such a different spectrum. As obviously, like, for those of you who don't know, my wife is white and I'm mixed race. And so, you know, a white, and this is me just talking from my own personal experience, again, not wanting to get raked over the coals, a white person will leave these issues to deal with until later because it's not an immediate problem. And for my daughter, who, if you met her, she doesn't look mixed race at all. She looks white. Like, she won't have to deal with anything with prejudice. White people don't always understand, and I think this is good to put on a podcast, like, you get that talk when you're dark-skinned, like, when you're little. When you're real little. Because your parents are worried about you. The first time I can remember ever having that talk is my dad ran the Columbus Marathon. And at that marathon, the KKK had decided to do some protests right out front. Because in America, you can do that. You go right up the courthouse doors, whatever. And so they were doing that. And my parents wouldn't let me go outside. And I was like, "Well, what's the problem? This, like, it's just not safe for you." And I didn't understand. So they had to explain that my color skin was different from other people's color skin. And that some people were funny about that. It's the first time, you know.
You kind of see yourself from other people's eyes.
And I probably had the talk, other talks later. Like, I didn't have the cop talk, because this is another talk you get talk from.
Yeah.
My father took me when I was like 15, almost when I first had my car, and sat me down. And he says, "I just want to tell you something." And I said, "Why?" He's like, "If a cop tells you to do something, don't ever argue. Just do exactly what they said." And I said, "But what if he's doing the wrong thing, Dad?" He said, "Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter at all."
This is why I think you should watch that episode. And also, the couple is, one's black and one's mixed. And so, and they have that kind of...
Yeah, so that's what I mean. You know, so it's been interesting to me because I'm not, you know, please, my wife is a brilliant woman and knows what she's doing. And I'm not any way, shape, or form on this podcast. And this isn't me just trying not to be, you know, stuck on the couch. But you know what I mean? Like, she has a valid, you know, a valid opinion with this, a valid argument.
It's a perspective.
It's a valid perspective. It's just, you know, and especially for my daughter, who may never have to face, you know, any kind of racism in her life because people just won't know about it.
Yeah.
But the talk you would have about race happens a lot earlier when you're dark-skinned.
Right.
Because it has to. Because it's a prominent thing. So I will watch that episode.
Yes, I'll find what season and what episode it is and I'll send it to you because, like, it was, like, super poignant. There's also, like, this brilliant thing, like, after Obama left office, like, the dad in of the family, he makes, like, this cheesy, like, photo montage to, like... "It's so hard to say goodbye to yesterday." Yeah, like Boys to Men.
Don't start Boys to Men. I love Boys to Men. That's what got me started singing. You know what I mean? Oh, it was like listening to Boys to Men.
Love that stuff.
So,
Motown Philly back again. Anyway, we're showing our age, goddammit.
No, no, not too bad. I mean, they were on This Is Pop. I haven't watched that episode, but I was like, I don't want to watch this.
Yeah, I watched it, and it made me feel old.
How, like, Boyz II Men was designed to make me like black people, you know? Like,
but like, they're still touring, right? And one of them isn't, because he, like, went into insurance or something.
Oh, God, I probably deal with him, you know what I mean?
But it's funny, because the shows they do, the people who come tend to be, like, you know, middle-aged moms and, you know, people who remember them when they were...
So this will be, like, this will be the complete bafflement I have when people here talk about Take That.
Yes, there you go, yes!
Because yeah, I just... Mate,
we have you know, like, a show, a tribute show, right, for Take That. Oh, dude.
Man, like, and trust me, my wife and I love to have arguments about Gary Barlow. Love to have arguments about Gary Barlow and my lack of, you know, I'm sure you're actually very talented, Gary, but...
Yeah, it's just, he's an easy target.
He is. He's a very easy target when I'm in a bad mood. So, okay, last thing I'll leave you with, because, you know, I always do try to give you something for the filmmaker out here, and you have listened to us rant and rave about just about everything on here, my crazy opinions Nazis. On Afghanistan, Nazis, and everything else. But listen, screenwriters listening, and filmmakers listening, this is a perfect example of how to structure an easy story, okay? Because you could do this. Now, if you don't want to do it to make it for someone else, you could do this, I would say, for really good practice, but you're taking a single event... You're changing it, and then you're writing a three-act story off the back of it.
Mm.
Okay, that's all this ever is, every single time. Mm. Okay, and these exercises are for writers at least. This is what will keep you good at what you do, because this is easy. Like, you should be able to create a difference, and then just, I guess the reason I like this from a writing perspective, one of the things that I consider myself to be a decent writer, a good writer, where I don't find that other people aren't, and where I'm so boastful on this podcast, I find a lot of writers who aren't good at writing cannot go from point A to point B.
Mm.
Now, I had to learn that through business writing, because when I write a report, it has to flow from one end to the other. Otherwise, my client will throw it back in my face and say, write it again.
Mm.
Stories are the same way. Like, you can have loads of interesting things, but they have to connect to one another. You can't just put... And no one knows this better than me at the moment, who's writing a screenplay that has three shorts within it. And originally, it was just three shorts thrown in with a wraparound. And now it's so different from that. Because when you got to writing the story, it had to start connecting with one another. So these are great examples of how you can learn to do that if you have issues with that. If you don't understand what I mean when you say go from point A to B, change one thing and then write it to its conclusion. That's all you do. So pick your favorite of the Marvel stories or any story. Change one key factor. So find, you know, go back to your screenplay book by Sid Field. Find your key incident and change it to the opposite.
Nice.
Then follow the screen. All you have to do is write what would happen, and you're done. I'm telling you, if you do that 10 times, it will make you an amazing writer, because you will understand point A to point B now. So that's my last kind of bit of what is What If good for. What If is good for to get those brain cells going, and to teach you, if you need to be taught, you know, how to start pulling from other universes. Because that's what I'm doing. When I write, I'm multiversing.
You are Kang. I would add to that as well, in the sense that I think it's a really good way to look at editing. Particularly when you put side by side Captain America, the first Avenger. There's a scene... the scene where he gets the serum, right? And this is matched shot for shot in with Peggy Carter. And I think what's interesting is one of the things that I struggled with when I started shooting and things like that is understanding, like, the length of insert shots, right? So cutting from, obviously, you know, you've got like a close up on an actor and you're getting their reaction. Okay. But then you're cutting to the gun on the floor. How long should that shot be?
Okay.
You know? And so seeing how they kind of matched the shots and the shot length and stuff like that, I think is a very interesting exercise to do. And also the montage. I think montage is, like, seriously the kind of thing that you could do, like, a whole university course on. You know, about... Like, the flow of a montage and the goals of a montage and...
In briefest words possible, what is the goal of a montage then? Why do you create montages then? What are you hoping to do?
In its most basic form is to display as much information as you can in the shortest amount of time possible.
Okay.
So we talked about this episode being 43 minutes long. The first Avenger is, what, 2 hours? At least 2 hours.
It's one of the longer ones, right? Yeah.
And this film, I mean, matches pretty much everything that happens to Steve Rogers. That's is right. happening.
It's our beat sheet. It takes the key beats, yeah. pulls them out, and just changes them.
Compressed, right? So that's why you have to have those montages. And even in the first Avenger, you have a lot of montages, you know, as he kind of becomes Captain America.
Oh, yeah, always, right? Any superhero film, because my understanding with montages is also that they help you quicken time. So if you have a time lapse, you know, you need to get from point A to point B faster, you can do that. Yeah. You know what I mean? You can do that with the montage. And unfortunately, every time I hear the word montage, Team America...
Yeah, I know! I know, right?
Montage! You're gonna watch a fucking montage!
It's so hard not
to. I hate
to.
That movie.
I kind of want to rewatch it. We gotta go to... Sorry, guys. You're here for a private conversation. I really want to go to the Book of Mormon. We have to go and watch that show.
Right, we'll go see Book of Mormon.
Okay. Maybe for my birthday, like, or
that sounds like a plan.
Something like that, very, you know, nice. Next year.
Nice.
Because that would be fun. Don't kill the baby. No, don't fuck the baby.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's like really fucking out there.
My mom saw this one and didn't say a word about it. That probably explains why. All right, folks. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Next week, we have a very special, we're going to be doing like kind of like a Fright Fest preview, which I have to remember tomorrow to get my Discovery tickets for the screens that I want to see.
Yes. You also should tell me, like, you know, if you recommend anything in particular.
Yeah. So, but, you know, Mitch and I will be kind of
I'm going to probably be pitching up in the pub, though, if I'm honest.
That's what Ed usually does, because Ed, like, it's really funny, because I always love you to go to the cinema stuff, but then I'm like, I'd actually rather have you talk to the friends, because we need the networking more than we need the film. So if you're not fussed, I love horror films, right. So...
I just feel for film festivals that so much happens not in the screenings, you know.
I was converted by the illustrious and amazing who's doing Romeo and Juliet right now, guys, Katie Bonham. I still remember that conversation. Would you rather be watching this shit film or would you rather be drinking right now?
But then, I've been to a lot of film festivals where I did just like... slam as many films as I could.
Oh man, my early days at Fright Fest.
Right,
yeah.
And you watch some good ones, right? There are some not great ones, but then I watched Whiplash at a film festival.
And it's it's the same reason I read like, what, 15, 20 comic books a month? Like, again, it's all material. It's all like, where is the trends going? What is working right now? What isn't working? Like, I go, you know, that's the thing. This is why I wish I could do it full time. I mean, I consume a shitload of content, but that helps me when I write, when I produce.
To
like
create content, I think you have to.
You have to see it. You have to. You know, this is the Stephen King thing. You have to read a million books and write a million books. And it's like, I do agree with that, because the more I do it, the easier it is. The more it's like, no, you wouldn't ever write it this way. You'd have to write it this way nowadays, because that's the type of stuff that's going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It was interesting because I just read an article that had Prana, got three very up-and-coming UK female directors that I don't know. I don't know Prana personally. She knows Katie. But it was the director of St. Maud, and then there was another one. And they were talking about how the similarities exist in each of these films, but they're all kind of showcasing a message. And that's the zeitgeist, guys. You realize there was a block of movies coming out at that time that would have all worked together, because they were all hitting on something that the general public was feeling.
Right.
Whether that was women or whether that was, you know what I mean? But
racial,
that is how it works, right? You know what I mean? Like, and I just find by consuming a truckload of content that I'm able to do that. So.
Yeah.
Then I have to flip my day job into somewhere else. So, anyways, folks, sorry for talking you off. Next week we've got Mitch. We're talking about, what was the name again?
La Habitación de Ferran.
Fermat. Fermat, yes. So it's a kooky, crazy kind of...
I've never heard of it, and it's a Spanish film.
Spanish sci-fi, right? So, Mitch, you are bringing it, baby.
Yeah,
and I'm so excited.
Proper out there. I love it.
I love the Blu-ray, which came with, like, big disclaimer being like, this is in Spanish. You have to put on subtitles if you want it in English. And it was like, okay, thanks for the warning there. Not really normally printed on many of the DVDs that I have, but good to know. All right, folks. Well, we'll catch you on the next one. Until then, any questions, please put them in the comments. If you want to, you know, make a comment about anything, put it in the comments. And like, share, and subscribe. We'll catch you next time.
Bye.